Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Maxwell's electromagnetic equations. There are four of them, and I suppose it's rather interesting, relevant, in that we've got various fields, a gravitational field, the electromagnetic field, the weak field, the strong nuclear field, and gravity and electromagnetic are long range. So that means that, you know, electromagnetism is something, and gravity is something that has a big effect. I can see a sun, I'm orbiting the sun due to the gravitational field and also getting radiation from it. So automatically it means that I can sort of put them in another area. And whereas the gravitational field and the electric field and magnetic field can put force, the electromagnetic field is great for transmitting energy from a hot spot to a cold spot. It tends to be the thing of choice, so it's very interesting to do it. Our human brains tend to see an electrical phenomena and then a magnetic phenomena, and we put the two in separately, but they're really sort of combined. So an electromagnetic wave is sort of a combination wave. It's actually a little twist wave which goes through space, and people make it a little bit hard for themselves by actually thinking a void, right? And then the wave goes into space, and the wave itself self-propagates. There's nothing in the wave itself. It's a vibration of the electromagnetic field, which pervades all space. Now, the electromagnetic field may be pulled to do various things. It may the electric field may be around an electric charge, and I'll re-look at this YouTube on quantum fields, which was good, but then also bad. But they had a few things which was I would agree with, that actual particles are, in fact, the mathematics of doing a Dirac delta function, that is, where you get a spike and it's got zero and zero width, and then it says infinitely small width and infinitely high existence, is description of a Dirac particle. So you've got these Dirac electrons and things in here which are knots, topological knots in the field, which hold a charge in one position, hold an electric field. A charge is a warped electric field, permanently warped. Space becomes permanently warped, and that's a charge, and it's knotted in. There's actually not physically an electron, you know, gritty bit. I can't get a remove the charge from an electron and have this very fine grit. There's no grit there. There's nothing. There's really nothing there. It is just a fold of space, and the field is very intense, and it's got this a matter field and an electric field, and basically what's the field mean? A field means a volume for which a parameter is measured throughout that volume. So you've got a temperature field, a grass field, that's an area, two-dimensional area for which crop is planted, that's a field. So your definition of fields there. So Maxwell's equations was basically a summary, similar like Newton's equation. Newton said this is a summary of what we know, and then people have stopped looking at what he said and just paraphrase it to Newton's has discovered it, but Newton said these are commonly held views, and he didn't really invent all that much, and he didn't state them in their modern way. He stated them in the slightly ancient way, where it's a more momentum. He didn't necessarily mentioned exactly what mass is in Newton. So we sort of birthed it from the retelling. It's like a legend. The legend was born. It's sort of like a incident which happens in a pub and gets retold, and finally it's a famous incident, but it never really actually happened. So similar to Maxwell, there's a whole series of things across, and at the end of this I'll just go about sort of the mental progress. We've got these things, fields and charges, and they're field equations, and they are field equations which relate to charges. They're four field equations. When they say that, so they're field equations, they relate to a description of space. And unwittingly, he described what space was, and then Einstein flipped it on its back, so to speak, and said, these equations therefore define light, and therefore they're transformed. Now, the interesting thing is that in special relativity, electric fields transform into magnetic fields, magnetic fields transform into electric fields. And so these fields that transform, or our perception, so an electric field is our perception of electrical phenomena, and a magnetic field is our perception of magnetic phenomena. And those perceptions change as we travel up to the speed of light, so that they rotate, the electric field and magnetic field rotate in a circle, so you can never go faster than the speed of light. And that, so special relativity was actually encoded in these Maxwell's equations. The speed of light's definitely in there, and space itself and the occupancy of space itself. One way to say is that the Einstein's gravity field, the actual field itself, is space and time itself. Now, and there's a whole lot of things where a lot of these things have one unit overlapping. So your gravity field is space-time, and there is a time field and a space component in your description of the electromagnetic field, so they're all linked in together by concepts. And it's interesting that the mass field then links across in the quantum mechanics description of it. So if you have sort of like a circle of Einstein's special relativity, Maxwell's equations, and the quantum mechanical equations, and then just kept on going around that, you eventually sort of step up forward, and you start to see more than one universe superimposed. You can see spin up, spin down universes. But getting back to it, Maxwell's equations, there's four of them. Now, the first one is the Gauss's law for electric field, charge in a bag. If I put a charge in a bag, electric field lines will go out of that bag proportional to the amount of charge in that bag. So if I have a small bag, if there, I would say, imagine six field lines, you know, one going up, left, you know, up, north, south, east, west, down, going there, no matter what size bag I put around there, that field line's there. Now, a field line really is a non-mathematical description of an electric field, of a field. And it was a very powerful, non-magnetic, heuristic thing that Faraday came up with. And this is one of the things from the YouTube. They completely got Faraday as a mathematical genius. No, he wasn't. He was a profoundly religious person in the age of almost medieval, in terms of his awe of things, and he would see this phenomena. He would imagine this first phenomena. He's imagined the first one seeing it, and he would see this would seem to have power rays, lines of force. You could see, and he was etching religious drawings showing the power from the hand of Christ. This very ancient Neolithic idea of power been represented by lines. It's a very ancient art form, and he brought it into modern science, and there it really stays. But we, to express things, we now express them as these field lines, but the field lines don't exist. They've got nothing beyond an artistic cartoon rendition. But for Gauss's law of electric charge, you can say that the del, I don't know what the word for, I've got the mathematical term, nabla, the upside down triangle, I think is that what it's called, dot E equals epsilon rho. Rho, rho is the charge density. Now, that's the differential form. That is, so if I shrink the bag down to a smallest unit for integrate ready for make it integration ready, I can shrink it right down. And so I shrink the right bag down to where there is a charge. And where there's no charge, there's no, the electric field, as much electric field has to go into the bag and out of the bag, so to speak. So that's Del E? I really can't remember. And then you've got del B equals zero. There is no magnetic charge, and there's a number of reasons why there'd be no magnetic charge, but you could imagine there's no north and south pole. That is the only way that you can electric field can come from charges. So electric field can go from point A to point B, where point A is plus charge and point B is a minus charge. The only way you can ever have a magnetic field is if it can't start anywhere, it can only go in a circle. Okay, so you, there's two types of things that an electric field can do. Field lines can do. They can go in a line from point A to point B from between charges, or they can go in circles. So electric field lines can actually, and people don't know this, twirl in circles. And indeed, you say, well, if I have let's say a charge, and I just twirl it in a circle, it will just heat up enormously. You know, if I have a wire and I just put a charge in it, and there's an electric field line in a circle, and it just goes forever, it will just go forever. It will just go and heat up. Of course, that's obviously what happens in induction cooking. You have a circular field line going in. So your field lines can either go straight or they can go in circles. They're not going to end on anything. They're just going to go back, and any charge on that field line will keep on going in circles. Obviously, the energy is coming from somewhere. It's one of those things. So we've got there first two Gaussian ones. The del of E equals epsilon naught rho, and the del of B equals zero. Then you've got the first one's two Faraday's law and then the next one. So Maxwell's equations are basically like you can imagine Maxwell walking down, opening a book from Gauss, walking to Faraday's exhibition, chalked by Faraday, and then walking across the road to Ampere. But Ampere started a little bit first. So the third law is Faraday's law of induction, magnetic induction. That is, that if I have a area and I change the magnetic flux through it, so I have an area and a magnetic flux through it, the electric circuit charge going in a circle, the electric field in a circle will be proportional to that. And that's curl B. Think about curl B equals dE dt. Now, if you do that, the area one, if you integrate the area, it then goes the negative flux dt. I think there's an epsilon in there as well. I can't remember. There's a negative. But this one is that I have an area, and I change the magnetic flux through it. That will create a circular electric field around it, a spinning electric field around it. And this is, I don't think there's sort of no understanding of space-time. This is just an observation of Maxwell of, there's nothing very profound about it. It's saying, Faraday, this is what you've done mathematically. This is what you're doing. You are changing the magnetic field and creating a spinning electric field, and you have a wire in, and the current gets pushed, the electric field gets pushed, you create a little battery by pushing the magnetic field. That's how we get alternators operating. And Ampere's law is a bit more generalized. It's exactly the same thing. It's an area, and instead of changing the magnetic field, I change the electric field, and that creates a spinning magnetic field. So Ampere's law is two things. This is along a wire, a circular field goes along. That's Ampere's law. Now, Ampere's law is sort of generalized to look a bit more like Faraday's law. By instead of, you can say, you can either have a current producing electric field or a changing electric field, so that your same area that you have for your induction, you now flip over and you have it for electric field, and you change your electric field through that, and that will create a spinning magnetic field, a magnetic field which goes in a circle. So one way of saying it is that if I have a circuit with a capacitor, a sort of a large capacitor in the centre, dare I say a battery, a capacitor in the centre, and I have a compass on the outside, when the current flows in that compass, if I hop across the wire, the compass needle will go perpendicular to the wire, indicating a circle around. Now as I go further away, the magnetic field will drop off as 1R, because the integral of the magnetic field in any path has to equal the same amount. It's got to be proportional to the current flowing through. And I've just got to remember the Ampere's law like that. But also, if I hold the compass around the plates, so I've got two plates, and the field is changing between those plates, that electric flux current will also change it. And so those two things. So if I have a magnetic field, a little compass, and I have a pulse of current going through, I will not be able to tell if it's going through a wire or if it's under a sort of a hood, and I can't say, I will not be able to tell if it's through a wire or through capacitor plates. That's really all that it says. Now, because it's differential and space-time, you can have magnetic field inducing an electric field, changing magnetic field can induce a changing electric field, and if they're out of phase, the electric field is moving up and down, it's stored in a circuit, and the magnetic field, electric field is moving out, up in phase, and the electric field's also moving one out of phase with that. It's sort of like a juggler, like a baseball player, sort of throwing up the electric field and the magnetic field, but one ball's always in the air. But if you change it such that they're in phase and coupled to the waveguide of electric field of space. Remember that this electric field and think this is a property of space. Yeah, it's a pretty amazing thing. It's a property of space to come through. It will go forward. So in an atom, the electric field and magnetic field is out of phase. That photon is inside. And when you adjust it, it puts some of that into phase and shoots it out as a photon, which is this coupled thing which then travels and time freezes. It's interesting that time freezes when it's there, it experiences time, but when it's outside, time freezes for it as it travels in the electromagnetic spectrum. So you come through, and so you really need to understand atoms. You have to understand antenna and space. You really need those three things together. If you think of the atom as gun, it's not quite like that. It's sort of like it doesn't fire a photon out. Yeah, like a gun could work in space, couldn't it? Deep space, where it's electromagnetic sound. You need the electromagnetic atmosphere of space for it to operate. You need a voice. You need the energy. You need your voice box. You need the space to come across. Similarly, you need that in electromagnetics, and this coupling between electric field and magnetic field is something which is observed why deeply it happens is something I don't know whether Maxwell deeply understood, if he could tell you deeply why Faraday's induction thing worked. He can describe it, why it works. I think there is this story in terms of it. There is this fundamental feeling of twistingness that I push through a field in one direction, I get a field spinning around in the other, another type of field spinning around in the other. And it's very much twisting. And the thing is that those field lines are set at zero rotation. So if I have an electric capacitor plate and I spin that electric capacitor plate, there is no way those field lines are going to spin outside. I think it's this type of stuff to do with, it's called Faraday's paradox. I'll have to look it up. Faraday's paradox quintessentially gets right deep into the understanding of this, in that this change, you pump the as you pump in and out the magnetic field. So you can imagine it's like a hand pump. As I hand pump the magnetic field back in and out, I get the electric field spinning around. So now, the interesting thing is that a transformer is both an ampere induction, is an induction loop, but it's Ampere's law and Faraday's law get together and you get a transformer. But this idea of that you pump the electric field in and out, and as you do it, the magnetic field swirls back and forth, and that swirling is a sort of a sign of rotation. The rotation of the field rotates, and this idea of rotational symmetry breakdown is very interesting. So what I'll do now is I'll read up Faraday's paradox. And so let me summarize again at the end of this, at the end of 24 minutes. Amazing. 24 minutes, there are four Maxwell's equations. Two are Gaussian, Gaussian electric charge, Gaussian the Gauss's law for electric field, which says the electric field is proportional, or the amount of electric field passing outside of a bag is proportional to the charge inside. The amount of magnetic field passing out of a bag is always zero. There's no such thing as a magnetic field. Then there's Faraday's law of induction, that curl E equals minus dB dt, or the loop, or the integral version is the loop current, the loop electric field. The loop electric field strength is equal to the integrated electric field, integrated over the circle, the battery, you know, all your little batteries in a little arc producing here. The battery strength is proportional to minus dB dE. I think there may be an epsilon in there. Then you've got Ampere's law, which is pretty much the same thing. The loop of all the magnetic field in a circle, or the curl B, that's nebula cross B, cross product of B, which is sort of an interesting thing to go through and contemplate what that actually means, equals is equal to the current. I think it would be mu naught J minus mu naught epsilon again dE dt, the electric field field changing, which is just covers your capacitor, saying that you can either have a direct current going through, or you can have an electric field that is the thing which would, in the same place, generate a current upstream from a stuff. And getting back into it, what this is essentially saying is that a summary of that is that a charge can create an electric field, otherwise can carry a spiky electric field that is like a skewer. You can imagine a cherry with toothpicks going into it, that type of wire connecting field. Or you can have loop fields, and your two loop fields are your two Faraday's law of induction. Law of induction is that I induce a circular electric field, or Ampere is a current induces a circular magnetic field, and can only get circular magnetic fields. Now, I sort of promised this, I'm going to finish this soon, in terms of brain stuff. So I understood this really well. I understood it on a mathematical level. Brain fried, and then going and reading it, and there's a certain thing is that you know that you can understand, there is something to understand, so that sort of changes your ability to it. And just looking at it, and fortunately with this confined barracks isolation, you can't do exercises, so you can just sit down, and I've just found with the brain stuff, being able to sleep for long times allows your head to get going again. So I'm still sure it's there, and I wonder that like a lot of the people who are sort of giving me the thumbs down don't understand this stuff and discount the ability to understand it, and that really doesn't matter, I suppose, in terms of understanding. It's just getting that overview. And did I have the overview before? I did have the overview before. I just sort of was more concerned about understanding it for the light getting away from an atom. That's or a phone. I was interested in a very narrow technological aspect rather than the general rules back. And as I've sort of gone back and studied Ampere and Faraday and Maxwell as people, I've understood the extent to which they've understood things, whereas I think people in modern day have A, haven't understood it themselves, and B, have added additional thought or scope or point, and it looks as though that person writing it has foreseen all of those for some reason. It's a great genius, but hasn't seen these applications. These other people have come in and seen the applications, and they've sort of got, it's sort of a bit of a time confused warp. So I think coming back a second time with the rehab, the sleep, the slowness, and also having a big background on to actually who these people were, you know, the who Amper was, you know, how he had a dreadful marriage. Faraday couldn't do maths to save himself. A deeply religious person who eventually had strokes. I think he may have even had similar stuff to me. Maxwell, someone who's Maxwell is probably one of the nicest people. There's certain very nice people. Maxwell, one of these things, Faraday, to a fault, over nice. Maxwell, very compassionate. And these are very nice. Maxwell and Faraday were very good, considerate friends. Boltzmann, also a very nice person. Very awful person. Marked. You've got this full spectrum of scientists, all very limited. And you've got to also remember back then, the nasty male was God. You know, they thought the nasty male, lord of the manor, or running a factory, someone who's a bit prejudiced, all this type of stuff. That they were just much more accepted. So, in terms of reading it, you also got to read a lot of the history around, and a lot of the stuff that we read now, we've cleansed. We've said this is just. I can't show that to anyone. And you put it aside and walk away. And it's only when you read deeply that you see these things. So I hope you've enjoyed that, and I'll try and make it a bit more clear. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.